Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Before we get started with the program this evening, I want to mention that Michael Perutka, who is the Constitution Party's candidate, or will be the Constitution's Party's candidate for President of the United States, is not getting any publicity at all. Although the Constitution Party will have him on the ballot in probably close to 40 states across America by November, Ralph Nader is lucky to be on 7 states because he really has no backing other than he has the backing of the Reform Party, and they simply picked Nader because they didn't have anybody else to run. And they'll have Nader on the ballot in 7 states. And yet, when you read the paper, they will tell you, well, there's certainly George Bush, and then there's John Kerry, and then there's Ralph Nader, and he's running too, and he'll probably get 2-3% of the vote. But you know, they never mentioned Michael Perutka. A God-fearing man who loves America, who's dedicated his life to trying to preserve the heritage which we inherited from nations, from years past, from generations past, so we can pass that heritage of freedom on to future generations. And he's running and doing everything he can to get publicity, but being totally blacked out by the controlled media. Well, he's going to be in the Spokane area tomorrow evening, and perhaps somebody could call in and tell us where the meeting's going to be and how to get there. Now, that's not of interest to our listeners in the East, but the people certainly in the eastern Washington area, specifically around Spokane, I hope that many of you want to go there and see Michael and wish him well. Now, the other thing, we have with us this evening is Bob DeMaw. And Bob has been spending the last 50 years looking for his brother who was lost. His brother was abandoned by your government in Korea along with 8,000 other soldiers, and the government knew it, and they've been lying to the American people for 50 years about the fate of those men. You know, it's an amazing thing how with the help of the controlled media, they can cover up the abandonment of 8 men. How often do you hear, oh, we never leave anybody behind? And that just isn't true. They abandoned well over 1,000 in the First World War, 25,000 in the Second World War. Most of them died in the Gulag, while you were lied to by President Eisenhower and President Nixon and John Kennedy and Johnson, and they all knew about it, but they all lied. President Reagan was the only one who really tried to do anything about it. He was, of course, surrounded by people appointed by George W. Bush, and they weren't about, of course, to ever bring the truth out, because they realized if the American people realized that they were lied to about the men we abandoned, why they would be concerned about the other things that are going on today. And it was President Reagan who'd said so well that a nation that will betray its fighting men will one day betray its citizens. And this is really what we're up against today, because the evil people have gained control of the reins of both political parties, and are certainly one of the worst culprits in covering up the fate of our men we abandoned in Korea and in Vietnam was a senator from Massachusetts named John Kerry. And with us this evening is somebody who attended those hearings, Bob DeMaw. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan.
Now, shall I call you DeMaw or DeMoss?
Dumas.
All right, Dumas. All right. Well, anyway, Bob has been at this for 50 years. And why don't you just give our listeners the background of how it was that your brother was left behind, and then how you know he was alive, and what happened, how you know that there are still American prisoners there who've been abandoned by their government.
Definitely, there are American prisoners still there in North Korea. But my brother was captured November 4, 1950. And when the war ended in 1953, he was seen being taken away by Chinese guards. This came from the Pentagon itself only about 5 years ago. They informed me that ex-POWs were interviewed and told them that they were with him at the Freedom Village, and he was taken away with hundreds of others that day, which was in August of 1953. And as I said before, I made a promise to my mother and father I'd spend the rest of my life, which I started when I was 21, to find out what happened to him and all the others that never came home. So that's how I spent my last 50 years, doing what I've been doing every day, getting a little bit closer every day.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, you actually attended those hearings, or at least some of them there, with John Kerry.
I testified before those hearings.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the background of the John Kerry hearings? Now, for our listeners out there,
all right.
I certainly am not a Bush supporter. I'm not a John Kerry supporter. But John Kerry is such a disreputable individual. And, you know, he intentionally betrayed those boys. Why don't you tell us the background of the hearings, what was brought out of the hearings, and then what happened at the end of the hearings?
All right. First of all, the Rules Committee in Washington... made up of the Senate Rules Committee, started this hearing to find out what happened to our prisoners of war from Vietnam and Korea and World War II.
Now, this was what, about 90, in the early 90s?
1991.
Okay, go ahead.
And in 1991, the committee was formed. The chairman of the committee was John Kerry, Senator Kerry from Massachusetts. The vice chairman was Bob Smith from New Hampshire. What happened was they started with Vietnam first instead of Korea. They didn't go back 50 years or 40 years. They went to Vietnam first. And what they did was they called witnesses from the Pentagon, from private life, from political parties that knew anything about the issue of prisoners of war. They testified before John Kerry's committee. And they had so much evidence on Vietnam, the happening live men still being kept there, that he kept trying to push the issue away instead of pushing it forward. He was pushing the issue away. Every time he got someone that testified about knowing about live Americans, he turned it over to some other issue that wasn't even related to the prisoner issue. But the biggest thing that ever happened was they had 1 year to settle all this issue of POW and MIA. That's what the Rules Committee had set on, 1 year. At the end of 1 year, they had one more issue to cope with, and that was Korea. What they didn't want was they didn't want anybody coming before that committee that knew so much about Korea in only 1 day. And that day was November 11, 1992. I was told I could testify on November 11 at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on that day. What happened was that I was at my hotel room in Arlington, Virginia. I received a phone call from his committee, Kerry's committee, asking me to give an interview the following morning to his lawyers, an attorney from Massachusetts, which William Cadena was one of the attorneys, and then to report to the POW office, which was in Washington, D.C. When I get there at 9 o'clock in the morning, the only person I saw in that office was a secretary, and I said, I'm here to give a statement before I testify this afternoon. She said, well, nobody's here. No one is here. They're all over there at the hearing. I said, I was told to report here. Well, she said, I'm sorry. So what I did was I went over to Senator Grassley from Iowa, his office, and I asked the secretary if they could contact Senator Grassley and if I could meet with him before I went over to the POW hearings. Well, she couldn't reach him right away because he was on the Senate floor. Anyway, I went over to the hearings, and when I got in there, there was a lady by the name of Frances Zewing, who is now Kerry's intermediary in Vietnam, doing business with Vietnam. She was the chief of staff at the time. And I was sitting there at 10 o'clock in the morning with the American Legion commander from Washington, and she came by my chair, and she says to me, you, of all people, will never testify before this committee. And I asked her why. She said, that's for me to know. And she walked off. Well, I got a little upset over that. So I got back down to Senator Grassley's office, and he had happened to come in at that time. And I told him what was going on. He didn't want me to testify that afternoon at 3 o'clock because I had so much evidence on my brother's case and the case of all the other men who never came home. And I had the evidence with me in my briefcase. Senator Grassley went to Senator Kerry. It got nowhere with Senator Kerry. The American Legion wrote a nasty letter to Senator Kerry asking him to stop jerking me around and let me testify. And then he still refused. So they went to Vice Chairman Bob Smith of New Hampshire, who went to Kerry and convinced him to let me testify. Otherwise, there was going to be a problem between the other senators on the committee, all except John McCain. So when it came time for me to testify at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all the newsmen that were there before I testified, CBS, ABC, CNN, everybody was there, and C-SPAN was up above filming the whole proceedings. And when I got to testify, I turned around to look to see what was going on in back of me, because there was a big crowd in the room, maybe 200 people. And all the newsmen that I knew that were in that room all disappeared.
Well, that's exactly what it is. In other words, they are told to leave because then they can't say that the information was suppressed. They just never heard it.
It went out, right out the door. They all walked out. And then when I started to testify, the only one that stayed on was C-SPAN. They filmed the whole segment, which I have in my possession. Anyway, the only person that was staring me in the face at that hearing that afternoon at 3 o'clock was Senator Bob Smith from New Hampshire.
In other words, all the other senators took off.
They all took off, every one of them. They all walked out. And the only one there was, like I said, was Vice Chairman Bob Smith. And then when I started to testify, I laid it all out for them in plain English. They could not misunderstand. And I was getting claps from the audience for cheering me and everything else because they were hearing the truth coming out. Finally, after about a half hour of speaking, Senator Smith says to me, he says, you meet with the North Koreans every so often in New York. He says, why don't you tell us here what answers you get from the North Koreans when you speak with them? I said, well, for 12 years, meeting with the North Koreans in New York, the ambassador has always told me the only way that we can settle this issue with the North Korean government, his government, is for the United States president at the time to sit down with their president and negotiate for these men. Well, you and I both know that's never going to happen, and it never did happen all these years.
Well, it's not going to happen because whoever is the president, they're told by their controllers not to negotiate. Don't bring those men home. If we bring them home, the American people will be relying. We've been lying all this time.
Oh, yeah. That's the name of the game. You're not bringing anyone home. Leave them there. Well, I don't blame the North Koreans because for all the years I met with them, they always said that they wanted to settle the issue, but nobody wants to negotiate from this country.
Now, of course, it's amazing. The French government is still negotiating to get their prisoners from Dien Bien Phu, the ones who were captured in 1954. Yeah. And they're still getting a few out every single year. They're old, decrepit men now, but at least France stands behind them. Other countries negotiate to get their prisoners freed. It's only in America, if you're captured by the other side and you're abandoned by your politicians, you will never come home.
No, and Dr. Stan, you have to realize that the British now are negotiating with North Korea for their prisoners from Korea. South Korea is negotiating for their prisoners. We're the only country that don't negotiate.
Well, of course, we just give North Korea tremendous amounts of food, and we give them tremendous amounts of oil, and we were building, at least till recently, a light water nuclear plant. We were doing all these things not so we could get our men, but so that we wouldn't get our men home, that they would remain silent.
Well, you remember a fellow by the name of Brent Scowcroft.
Right.
Colonel Scowcroft is now head of the intelligence coming out of the Far East and Southeast Asia. And he's in his 80s now. But he's still got his nose in there, keeping these men where they don't want them to come home. His job is to receive all the intelligence coming out of there on these men that are still living. And I can assure you right now, his job is to keep them there, not to bring them home.
No, go ahead. Yes. Brent Scowcroft, for our listeners, was very, very close to George Herbert Walker Bush when President Bush was in the White House.
Right.
And what people have forgotten is that George Herbert Walker Bush was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the largest drug-pushing organization in the entire world. And anybody who doubts that needs to get our four tapes set. Is there really a war on drugs where you'll hear ex-people who work for the Drug Enforcement Agency, for the various branches of government, talking about how There is no question at all the CIA is involved in drugs. In fact, the Inspector General of the CIA even put out a report that was until recently on the CIA website. We have copies of it talking about the CIA involvement in drugs. But we can't let the American people know that.
No.
They might realize that our war on drugs is a phony war, because we have a war on drugs, we have more drugs, we had a war on cancer, we have more cancer, we have a war on pornography, and we have more pornography, we have a war on AIDS, and we have more AIDS, we have a war on terrorism, and are you surprised we have more terrorism?
You hit the nail right on the head, because that's exactly what's happened in this country for the past 70 years, 60, 70 years. It's always going to lead to something other than what they're supposed to do. If there are men alive in North Korea and Vietnam and World War II, and I believe there still may be some men still alive from World War II in Siberia, somewhere in Siberia. But when you come right down to it, the biggest issue in this country is never to negotiate for our men. That's their issue. We cannot negotiate with anyone. We've never done it, and we never will do it.
But, of course, they always go through, oh, we're going to get the bones. Oh, we want to bring those bones home. Well, I don't want to bring home bones. I know you don't either. We want to get the live prisoners of war out. But, you see, it's all a game they play with the minds of the American people, focusing our attention on the bones. We want to find the bones. And never focusing attention on the live POWs, because they know they're there. All the evidence is there. When Bobby Garwood came home, he was never supposed to escape from South Vietnam, from Vietnam. And when he did, he was told by the commander of his camp where he was, you'll be sorry you ever left here. You'll be sorry you ever go home. And they must have known what was going to happen, because the high government officials, military officials, did everything they could to accuse him of collaboration, to accuse him of treason. They wanted to send him to prison for the rest of his life for daring to come home. But he had the stories. He knew about all the men we left behind there. And we even have a four-tape set of interviews with Bobby Garwood called One Man Returned. That's One Man Returned. And if you haven't heard it, it's well worthwhile listening to. And there are people, of course, who are very close to Bobby Garwood who knew the story. And they tell it from all different points of view. In fact, one of them is the military officer, Colonel Tom McKenney, whose job it was to kill Bobby Garwood. Mm-hmm. That was his assignment. Kill Bobby Garwood. If you ever find him, he's a traitor. Kill him. And he tells the story. And when he finally realized he'd been lied to by his own government, told to kill an innocent American.
That's right. That's right. You know, when Bobby Garwood's case got to stand, they not only kept the money away from him that they owed him, they still owe him all his back pay, which they never paid him. And he can't get into federal court. He's been trying to get into federal court to get his money back all these years. And the government is controlling the federal judges. So he can never get what he's owed in the first place and clear his name, because he told the truth when he came home and said he knew of other Americans being held behind with him at the time he got out of there. So the guy is more or less in limbo. He doesn't know where to go. He has nowhere to turn. The government's not going to help him.
Well, let's tell the rest of the story about your testimony before of Senator Bob Smith.
Right.
You pick up the story, and so Bob Smith was talking to you, all the rest of the senators had left, including John McCain, who, of course, went over to the North Vietnamese when he was a prisoner there. We have pictures of him hugging the man who tortured so many of our other and killed so many of our other prisoners.
Right.
Pictures of him hugging this man when he came to Washington, D.C. And we even have the testimony, the statement by John McCain from Newsweek magazine when he was asked, well, why are you running for president, the senator? And he said, well, because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds.
Yeah. Right.
For those of you who don't know, you need to get the film The Manchurian Candidate, that's starring Angela Lansbury and Frank Sinatra. And, of course, she triggered The Manchurian Candidate by turning over the Queen of Diamonds. We have the article, saved it all these years. I think John McCain knows exactly what he's doing. But the people who control the media don't want the American people to know that. So we'll be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, Bob Dumas. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Okay, well, Dr. Stan here, and we're going to wait. We'll have some of our listeners are, of course, hearing commercials on the commercial stations. But right now, let's go ahead and continue the story. So you're testifying before Senator Bob Smith, and Bob Smith is an honest man, and he wants to get the truth out. So yeah. Interesting that the Republican Party did everything they could to get Bob Smith out of office. In fact, they financed and ran somebody against him in New Hampshire so that he would not get the Republican primary. And they did that, you know, and yet recently when Senator Arlen Specter, who is really ought to be a Democrat, but he's a Republican from Pennsylvania, Republican senator, and he was challenged by an honest-to-goodness conservative man who had a support from all across America for his conservative principles, because anybody who loves America hates Arlen Specter. He was one of the few Republican senators to side with the Democrats, along, of course, with Trent Lott, both of whom are 33rd degree Masons. They refused to impeach Bill Clinton. That's why, of course, Bill wasn't impeached, because of the Masonic collection, and both Specter and Lott were Masons, and they certainly could never vote against a fellow Mason or somebody associated with the Masonic movement. But the President, George Bush, went on several occasions to Pennsylvania to campaign in the primary, where it was supposedly you're not supposed to interfere if you're a Republican against another Republican candidate, but they were there, of course, campaigning for Senator Specter. Why? Because they wanted a liberal Republican, a man who hates America, who votes consistently against Republican principles, back in the Senate, and yet they, of course, did everything they could 2 years earlier to get rid of Senator Bob Smith. So that tells you a lot about the Republican Party. They don't want people who stand for righteousness and truth. Unfortunately, they want people who are radically to the left, and they back former government Sununu. I don't really remember Sununu. He was an aide to George Herbert Walker Bush. He was finally forced out of office when it was noted that he was using government helicopters to take him to his golf games, and it wasn't just one time, it was over and over again. There was like he was using the government as his own cash register, and when this came out, why they had to let him go. But don't worry, they had a nice place for him. He is now the United States Senator from New Hampshire. So yeah. They reward their people very, very well, and they look after their own. They don't have very many of them, but with the help of the media and a fabulous amount of money that is at their disposal, why they always can be certain that they can control the Senate. That's why we had to have the 17th Amendment, was passed back in 1913, 1914, to get away with the senators being elected by the state representatives so they would represent the states. They wanted them to be, well, the finest senators that money could buy, and that's what we have in the United States Senate today. What a sad commentary on what was once a great republic. Now we have a democratic America with senators for sale. But pick up the story from there, Bob.
All right, so getting back to Senator Smith. In 1990, Senator Smith was the first United States senator and was very interested in the POW issue in North Korea. He walked across the 38th parallel, unbeknownst to the American military, walked straight across the 38th parallel, had a one-hour meeting with the North Koreans in 1990, convinced the North Koreans to return the first set of remains ever returned from North Korea. He was the first United States senator to ever do this. Well, he took a lot of flack when he got back from Washington.
Hold that thought there for just a moment here, and we'll be picking up our stations right now. Well, Dr. Stan, and let me ask if there's anybody out there in the Spokane area who knows where Michael Perutka is going to be talking tomorrow. Why, please give us a call here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We'd like to let the people there in the Spokane area know that Michael is going to be there, a presidential candidate. But I bet you're not going to see too much of it mentioned ahead of time unless by the media, unless, of course, maybe it's paid ads. I'll be very interested in knowing what sort of a response you're getting from the local media there announcing his coming. Anyway, I'll pick up the story of certainly Bob DeMoss is talking about Senator Bob Smith, who was the co-chairman of the committee, looking into the background of the men we abandoned in Vietnam and in Korea. And you were saying that Senator Bob Smith had actually gone to Korea and negotiated with the North Koreans for at least a return of the remains of our boys, but he wasn't able to get any of the live ones out, was he?
Not at that time. When he came back, he wrote a letter to President Clinton, told Clinton what he had done and what the North Koreans had told him. And the North Koreans had told him there were hundreds and hundreds of Americans that were taken into China during the war and after the war. But they, at the time, did not admit to Senator Smith that they were holding live Americans at that time in 1990. So in 92, when the hearings came up on Vietnam and Korea, one day on Korea, after the testimony and that one day, my testimony before Senator Smith, I received a phone call the following day at my home here in Connecticut from Dino Coluccio, his chief of staff at the time. And Dino Coluccio said, can you set up a trip to Pyongyang, North Korea, for the senator? He said, because they have to go through you, according to the North Korean ambassador in New York. So I called ambassador at the time, Ho Jong. His name was Ho Jong. Today, he's still an ambassador in North Korea. So I asked Ambassador Ho Jong, would you mind going to Washington, D.C., if you have permission, and sit down with Senator Smith? He would like to go to Pyongyang and talk about the POW issue in your country with whoever would be there, the minister, the president, whoever. So he says, I'll call him. So he called Senator Smith. The trip was put. The trip took place, and I believe it was December of 92, right after November, right after the hearings ended. He went to North Korea, and when he came back, he called me, and he told me, he said, when he got to Pyongyang, North Korea, and he was told about all the Americans that were taken from North Korea into China, and the Soviet Union, by the way, and when he asked the North Koreans about live Americans, and at the time he presented them a list of 450 names of Americans that we knew were alive at the end of the war, including my brother's name, the North Koreans were very receptive by saying that the United States never wanted these men back. You presumed them all missing, presumed dead in 1954, 8,200. So what reason is there to ask about live Americans? We're telling you that most of these prisoners went to China or the Soviet Union. So he wrote this letter to President Clinton, and I got a copy of that letter in my files. So what happened when he came back, he called me again the second time, and he says, you know what? He says, when I was in that meeting in Pyongyang, in the capital, in that room with the foreign minister, I knew there were live Americans still in North Korea just by what he told me in that room. He didn't come right out and say it, but I had the feeling that there were many Americans still from the Korean War in North Korea. So I really gave a lot of credit to Senator Smith. As a matter of fact, when he was forced out of office by his own party, about 6 months ago, my nephew was doing a documentary on the issue of prisoners in North Korea, met with Senator Smith in Miami, Florida. That's where he lives. I believe it's in Sarasota, Florida. And he interviewed him for 6 hours. And Senator Smith, it's right on the documentary what he says about that trip to Pyongyang and how he was forced out and all about Senator Kerry not doing his job as a chairman. This is all on videotape and on a documentary that's being filmed now.
So all right, well, one of these evenings we want to get Senator Smith as a guest here. I'm sure he learned so much during that time. We do have somebody who's called in and said that Michael Perutka will be speaking at the Shady Park High School at 3500 North Ash Street in Spokane tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. It's a fee of $12 at the door, and that'll be going towards helping the campaign. That's the Constitution Party candidate, Michael Perutka, who will be speaking at the Shady Park, Shady Park High School, 3500 North Ash in Spokane tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, $12 at the door, S-H-A-D-L-E, Shaddle Park, I guess it is. So I hope many of you can get there, and we'll be back in just a moment or two with our special guest here, and we'll be talking more about the men we left behind. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Bob DeMoss. We're talking about the men we left behind. And so certainly Senator Smith was convinced that there were still live American prisoners there in the early 90s. Bob?
Yes, he's still convinced of that right now, today.
All right, fine. That's one reason they had to get him out of the United States Senate. They can't have anybody there who might spill the beans and embarrass both the Democrat and Republican administrations who've been lying to us all these years.
It's everybody's fault, Dr. Stan. It's the Republicans, the Democrats. It doesn't make any difference who's in Washington. They all know about the live Americans. But nobody wants to put their face out there in front of everyone and say, well, we've got to do something about this and bring these men home. They just won't do it.
Well, we saw what happened to Bob Dornan, who really tried to do the best that he could, and of course his Republican Party made sure that he wasn't reelected to Congress, and we can thank Newt Gingrich for that. And Newt Gingrich, who pretended to be such a good, moral, Christian, conservative leader, and actually he was sleeping around a totally immoral, corrupt individual who sold his soul, working with the Council on Foreign Relations with the power brokers. Some people will do anything for money and power. And that was Newt Gingrich. A very convincing, very warm, very cordial, but of course a man was certainly not a man of integrity, or certainly no one would ever accuse him of being virtuous. Glib talker, great salesman, great confidence man, but Newt Gingrich betrayed Bob Dornan and made sure that he was not returned to the United States House of Representatives after a totally fraudulent election, and they knew it was a fraudulent election, and the Republicans controlled the House, but they didn't want Bob Dornan there, and why? Because he wanted to bring the boys home.
Right, because in 1996, when I testified before Bob Dornan, right after my testimony, we met in the back room, him and I and a few others. I think Al Santoli, his aide, was chief of staff, was there. And Bob said to me, when I'm reelected again, he says, we're going to bring these men home. There's so much evidence here, it's unbelievable. But it's true. What he did was, he brought before his committee four people, and I think you know one of them, is Joe Douglas.
Sure.
Who wrote the new book, Betrayed, a couple of years ago. Joe testified that day, and Sung Lee, the analyzer and investigator for Live Americans in North Korea, testified. General Senior from Czechoslovakia testified, and Colonel Kosel, who I spoke about before, who was chief of staff for President Eisenhower. All of these four men knew there were live Americans left behind in North Korea, and they also knew there were still Americans being held. In Sung Lee, who was the investigator on live Americans, said that he knew of at least 60 Americans in one area of Pyongyang right now in 1996, of course, that were still living and being held against their will all these years.
Okay, fine. Well, our guest this evening is Bob DeMoss, and we're talking about the men we left behind. And Bob has been working for 50 years to try to get his brother home. And, of course, Colonel Corso, you mentioned, had been the chief of staff for Eisenhower. This was a period immediately after the Second World War. And he always had a feeling, he was getting an old man, he always knew that he was responsible for covering up the abandonment of between 20 and 25,000 American boys at the end of the Second World War, men who were sent off to Siberia, men who went overseas to fight for freedom, who were betrayed by their government. And if you doubt that, you need, of course, to get the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report. We have copies of it. And it's amazing how often I tell people that it's available through Radio Liberty, and how infrequently anybody wants to read about the men we abandoned in the First World War, the documentation on the men we abandoned in the Second World War, and in Korea, and in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But Colonel Corso was, of course, chief of staff to Eisenhower at the end of the Second World War. Why don't you tell his story? Why he suddenly, after all these years, was willing to come forward and admit the cover-up and the lies that he'd gone along with for such a long period of time?
Well, back in 1992, just before I testified and all the other witnesses on Korea testified, he came to a news conference in Washington, D.C. at the press club. And all the newsmen were at that press club that morning. There was NBC, CBS, ABC, all of the major networks. Colonel Kossel was behind the mic at the head table. And he started to speak about why it took him 40-something years to come forward and tell about what he told Eisenhower when the men were not returned in 1953. And he, and this is what he told also about the CIA being involved with paying the newsmen under the table to keep their mouth shut.
In other words, the CIA was paying the newsmen there, and they're still paying him today, not to reveal, but to conceal the truth from the American people.
Right, that's what he told us, right at that news conference. And so anyway, the next day, when he testified before Kerry's committee, he said exactly what he said the day before. And there was such a hard testimony coming out of this man's mouth that was unbelievable that everybody knew that he knew what he was talking about. He said that the Secretary of State, Jackson, at the time, called him and said that the President wanted to talk to him at the White House. So they went into the White House. This is in a year after the war now, in 1954. They went in and had a meeting with Eisenhower. And Colonel Crossell told Eisenhower at that meeting, he said, Mr. President, we have thousands of Americans that were ready to be released in 1953 on the 38th parallel, and they're not going to come home because the Chinese and North Koreans will not release them unless we release their prisoners. And Eisenhower said, well, we're not going to release the prisoners we're holding because they don't want to go back and live under communism. So the North Koreans and Chinese saw this, and they kept what they had, which was maybe 6,000 Americans, according to Crossell. So Crossell says, well, what do we do about it? And when the president said, well, what would you suggest? He said, I suggest that we don't tell the families that we can't get them out. Because if we tell the families we can't get them out, we will never be able to explain it to the American people. So Eisenhower says, well, put it on record. Put it in a record that these men are being held and not released, and we'll let it go at that. So that's the way it was put into the record. It's still in the congressional record if someone wants to take the pains to look at it.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Neil Davis is calling from up north. We want to take his call. Hi, Neil. Did you have something you wanted to announce?
I did, Dr. Stan, and that is the Michael Peruka and Chief Justice Roy Moore event. And I wanted to look at the address. I believe you announced this a short time ago.
Right, we did. Somebody said 350 North Ash, Spokane, at the Shuttle Park Hospital, High School. Is that right?
That is not correct.
All right, fine. Then what is it?
It is at the Shuttle Park High School Auditorium.
Okay, fine.
At 7 p.m. on the 29th, which is tomorrow.
Right.
And the address is 4327 North Ash.
4327 North Ash. Well, somebody gave us the wrong address, and maybe that was one of those liberals.
It was probably somebody making an honest mistake.
All right, fine. 4327 North Ash in Spokane.
Yeah, 4327.
And is there there's a $12 fee at the door?
Yes, there is. And you could also buy the tickets in advance. Now, I don't know when the deadline for advance is, but at a Tickets West outlet. And so they can call 1-800-325-SEAT and find out an outlet near them, and they can physically pick the tickets up. If they were to order with credit card on that phone number, the tickets would be in will call. But for, to help traffic move through the lobby and so on, it would be better if they were able to pick them up either in advance or they could even buy them at the door.
All right, fine. And then Judge Roy Moore and Michael Peruka will be there.
Yes. And can I take a moment here, Dr. Stan? Last week, I was in Philadelphia at Valley Forge at the Constitution Party's presidential nominating convention. And I will tell you, what a fabulous, fabulous group of people. Very principled. And they nominated Michael Peruka to be on the ticket for the presidential candidate, and Chuck Baldwin out of Pensacola, Florida, as the vice presidential running mate.
Well, very good. And, I sure didn't read about that in the paper, but I'm not surprised at all. When you've got the CIA paying journalists not to print things, why, it's little wonder why that there's so much true news we never do here.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise, but C-SPAN was there, and they have a program that airs, in fact, it was airing last night, called Road to the White House. And they showed Michael's acceptance speech, and I believe they may be showing other aspects of that convention.
Well, so C-SPAN's one of the only television networks that's not under the complete control of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, look, thanks so very much for calling.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, and you take care.
You do, too. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
I hope you have a good turnout tomorrow night.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Carlos, who's calling from Carson City with a question for Bob. Carlos, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan, I've met you here in California a couple of times.
Right.
Yes, Mr. Dumas, in various articles that I've read through time, I come out with the impression that some of our POWs were left, of course, knowingly by our government, but also that apparently they did biological experimentation with some of our POWs.
Oh, yes.
Substance to that?
Yes, a lot of substance to that. As a matter of fact, if you buy the book I mentioned called Betrayed by author Joe Douglas, he mentions the biological experiments that were put on these men when they were prisoners of war, when they were taken into Czechoslovakia. They had a factory, a human factory in Czechoslovakia, where they performed experiments on our men. And when they finished completing the experiment, they cremated the bodies, and no one ever heard of them again.
And yes, I spent the weekend with Joe Douglas. So, but it's a great book. It's called Betrayed. It is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. It's a summary of all the other books on the men we abandoned. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the information about the macabre medical experiments that were carried out on American POWs. And I'm sure our government had full access to that information, so they could use that information as well on how to control people, break their will through the use of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do anything they want to. They know exactly how to do it. And isn't it amazing that our government has suppressed that information about the experiments on Americans that they never could have done on Americans here? But, well, our good friends over in Russia were able out to. There's a book called Moscow Bound about the men that were sent to Russia from Korea, and probably some from Vietnam as well, with the full knowledge of our government and every intention of covering this up for the American people. Anything else, Carlos?
Well, you know, as a side issue to that, that was Colonel Bo Grice, I believe, that traveled to the Far East a few years back to try to find out about the POWs left in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's right.
And he found out, as a side issue to that, he came across somebody named Kung Sa, who was the heroin distributor for the area. And he mentioned that the individual that represented the U.S. government in buying heroin from him was our deputy chief of staff right now, Secretary of State Saint Germain.
No, Richard Armitage.
I'm sorry, it's Richard Armitage. I don't know where I got Saint Germain from.
That's
all right. Richard Armitage. Now, I know this is sort of a side issue to that, but any knowledge about that, Mr.?
Well, the only thing I can tell you about Richard Armitage is that he investigated my brother's case 10 years ago, and he came up with the final conclusion that my brother was a prisoner while I was left behind. But you know what? That was the last word I ever received from him, because when he mentioned that to me, I said to myself, well, either somebody was listening to what he told me, because I never heard another word from this man. This man has never mentioned prisoners of war again since he told me that 10 years ago.
And he was actually a graduate of, my understanding, of Annapolis. In fact, Ollie North told one of my friends that Richard Armitage was his closest friend.
Right.
So anything else at all, Carlos?
Well, Richard Armitage also was part of the 9/11 Commission.
Well, no, he wasn't part of it, to my knowledge, was not part of the 9/11 Commission. The 9/11 Commission, of course, is an independent, is not made up of people active in government at the present time. And, of course, he is the Deputy Secretary of State, the second highest ranking person in the State Department today.
Yes.
Okay, thanks so much for calling,
Thanks
Carlos.
So much.
And your points are well made.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, go ahead, Bob.
Dan, I want to say one thing about the Council on Foreign Relations in this country. It's because of the Council on Foreign Relations that we never get back live Americans from Vietnam, Korea, or any world war, any war. You have to look at who belongs to the Council on Foreign Relations. You have government officials, past and present, everybody from the president on down to a congressman or congresswoman. You have all your major network anchor people, like I mentioned before, Tom Brokaw, and Jennings, Barbara Walters.
Don't forget Dan Rather, of course.
Dan Rather is the main one. Dan Rather. And they're all on the list as members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So the government controls the newspapers and news people, and they only print what they want them to print. When it comes to prisoners of war in this country, they will not do what they want to do. I've had many, many reporters come in my home and wanted to print something about the live Americans in Vietnam and Korea, and they could never do it. They either resigned their positions or got out of there, and they just could not get the story out. Never. Newsweek did it once, but it faded away the following day.
Well, I think it's a question of does the government control the CFR, or does the CFR control the government?
Right.
For our listeners out there, we do have an article written by Richard Harwood in October of 1993, and Richard Harwood was the ombudsman for the Washington Post at the time, and he said that the Council on Foreign Relations is the closest thing we have to a ruling elite in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed out that the president at that time was a member of the CFR, the Secretary of State was a member of the CFR, as was the Deputy Secretary of State, five Assistant Secretaries of State, the public relations person for the State Department, the heads of most of the major cabinet positions in the United States government, public relations man to the president, David Kurgan, and of course, I mean, it was just amazing to see their control. And then he pointed out that they controlled ABC and CBS and NBC and the New York Times, the Washington Post on the liberal side, and the conservative side, the Wall Street Journal and the National Review and others. So they control both sides of the political mm-hmm. spectrum. But they can't let the American people know that. He said that these people don't report the news. They make the news happen. Now, for the skeptic out there, says this couldn't be true. This just couldn't be true. I say, well, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of Richard Harwood's article. Of course it's true. And the reason you don't know that is because of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And Bob was just saying that Colonel Corso had talked about how at the time of Korea, the government was paying, or the CIA was paying, the journalists to keep it secret. If you read William Odom's book, General William Odom's book, Fixing Intelligence, it came out last year, 2003. He is a four-star general. He has signed all sorts of secrecy. Also, he can't tell you what he knows. He was the head of NSA, the super secret spy agency, the most secret of all the spy agencies in the United States. But in his book, he says, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA employ journalists in the media? And several places he mentions the CIA relationship to controlling the media. But you see, you're never going to see a book review of that book, because the last thing they want for the American people to realize, the last thing they want us to realize, is that we're not getting the truth here. You'll find far more about what's going on in America if you go to Europe or read the European papers than you will here in the United States. And if it weren't for the Internet, if it weren't for alternative radio programs such as ours and those mm-hmm. many of our friends, why, the public wouldn't have any idea, would they, Bob?
No, none of it would. You would never hear anything if it wasn't for your program and programs like yours around the country. It's just too bad that there aren't more programs like yours enlightening the people in this country about what the truth is when it comes to live Americans. As I said many times before, we have never, never, never negotiated for one live American from any war, except for Bobby Garwood coming out because he slipped a note to a Swedish diplomat. No one has ever come out of a prison camp alive in this country, other than Iraq recently, and that was done on the field commander's way of doing things, not the government's way, not in Washington. 93,000 men and nobody's been accounted for. That's ridiculous.
Well, I think it's so important that our job is to let the people know. And when there are enough people who care, then things are going to change. And we're going to keep hammering away at this issue and suggesting our listeners get our four tapes out on the men we left behind. Get the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report and get the four tape set, One Man Returned.
Mm-hmm.
Get Joe Douglas's excellent book, Betrayed. It's so important that you have this material, that you can document this material. And Dr. Joe Douglas is a very reliable individual who's been asked to testify many times before his various congressional committees. But the trouble is that the major media do not report what is said. Why? Because they don't want the American people to know. And as long as they can control what we read and what we hear and what we see, then they're able to control the reality of the American people. And until we can get the American people to think and reason and realize the wisdom of what President Reagan had said. A nation that will betray its fighting men will one day betray its citizens.
Dan, you know, when before Joe Douglas' book came out, he sent me the manuscript to read. And I read Joe's manuscript, and he asked me if I wanted to make any changes that he didn't put in the book that I knew of that should be put in there. Well, I wrote back quite a few pages of some of the things I thought should be put in the book, which he put in. And he told me on the telephone after he called me back, and he said, you know, Bob, he says, they didn't want me to get this print. They didn't want me to get this book printed because, he said, I've already been threatened with my life writing this book. I just researched this for 7 years. He says, I spent 30-something odd years in the Defense Department, intelligence, working for senators and congressmen. This is the most truest story that was ever written about American POWs and MIAs. And he says, if the book comes out, we'll be lucky if it gets printed, which it was printed, finally. And when it did come out, I read the whole book forward and backwards. That's the most hard-hitting book on live Americans that were ever, ever printed. And he cannot get on any major networks with this book. He can get on no major networks in this country because of the truth in this book.
Well, in fact, left the meeting yesterday and Joe Douglas was sitting by the door, he and his wife, and we'd had dinner, both dinner and lunch at this three-day meeting we attended. And I said, Joe, as soon as you get home, I'm going to get you back on our programs, and I intend to do that. Well, we're not a great voice, but at least we've got 10, 11, 12 stations that listen to this part of the program. And we just hope and pray that if you're out there in the listening audience, you tell other people about Radio Liberty and about our effort to get the truth out across America. Well, we've got Roger on the line.
Yes.
We'll take his call before we wrap up this hour and go to the second hour. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thanks, gents. Do you think we'll have a new class of POWs in the form of last Wednesday, Thursday's release that Bush drops renewal of immunity for UN peacekeepers, citing fierce opposition, no doubt exacerbated by the torture revelations, and somewhat mitigated by agreements with 90-some countries to not turn over U.S. personnel to the World Court, the International Criminal Court. But I guess this means that neither Bush nor any future president will be participating in UN peacekeeping operations, huh?
Do you want to comment on that, Bob?
Well, it's the first time I've heard of this.
Yeah, well, apparently they have dropped their opposition to having Americans tried by the international criminal courts for war crimes. And I will tell you, of course, that this whole thing is a scam. It is the major force behind the World Court has always been the Council on Foreign Relations and
right.
The elite who control our government. So they've been playing this, oh, we don't want this. This is a terrible thing. You know, it's sort of like the old story of Peter Rabbit. It says, don't throw me in the briar patch. Well, they've set up the International Criminal Court, which is what we've wanted all along. Why? Because you have to have a world criminal court when you have a world government, and you have to have a legislative body, which is, of course, the United Nations, and you have to have the executive, which is Kofi Annan. You have to have the police force, and we're developing a world army. We're moving towards a world fascist government. And from a political point of view, it will mean the loss of all freedom in America. But from a spiritual point of view, we are establishing the government of the Antichrist. And none of our political leaders, none of our church leaders will really explain in great detail, very, very few of them, are willing to actually come right out and say that this is Satan's plan to take over control of the world, which has always been his goal. He was going to replace God. So why won't our religious leaders say that? They know it, but of course they're afraid to. Well, we'll talk as long as we can, as long as God gives us breath and protection, and as long as you out there in the audience will help us. Roger, thanks so very much for
the
subject. I think it's the important one.
Yeah, I hope everybody calls their congressmen to get us out of these UN peacekeeping operations.
Well, let's just get us out of the United Nations,
and
out of the world government, because it's America's wealth that is being used to promote this world government. It's our military power that is promoting the world government. When are the American people going to understand that the average individual throughout the world doesn't want to give up their national sovereignty? It is America that is the major driving force behind this effort, Satan's effort, to unite the world. Thanks so much, Roger.
God bless you.
Okay, fine. And, of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're primarily dependent upon those of you in the listening audience to join us in this a truly epic struggle, this spiritual struggle for the survival of America and the souls of our people. So if you agree with me that we are involved in a spiritual battle and you want to stand with us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. When you join the Radio Liberty family, you get our four best tapes of the month. You get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you're helping us as we purchase time on radio stations all across America. And believe me, it's a very expensive proposition doing what we do. But quite frankly, we need your help to do what we do. And if you agree with us that there's a problem, then hopefully you'll agree with us that the solution is first education, and then hopefully as people begin to realize the degree of evil there is in the world, they'll begin to realize that there has to be a good, there has to be a God. And in fact, as we sat with Dr. Joe Douglas, who we've been talking about, and I don't think he'd mind my commenting that he had studied these evil, organized evil for so many years, and finally, after studying this for so many years and seeing the hopelessness there, this is what brought him back to a personal relationship with our Lord. And today, of course, he professes his derived the divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. But he came in, as he said, through the back door, and I said, gee, that's the same way I got in. That's the way I got into it, Joe. And I think a lot of people have gone through the same experience. And so we hope perhaps in what we say that some of the things we allude to, maybe the four tape sets or the videos or the books, that you will come to a realization that we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. And you want to be awfully, awfully sure that you're on the right side. Because if you were to die tomorrow, where would you spend eternity? Are you sure there is no eternity? What happens if you say there isn't and you're wrong? How would you feel about the decision not even to explore the alternatives? And if you were to stand before the gates of heaven and ask, and be asked, why should you be admitted to heaven? What would you ask? Would you say, I was a good person? Because that's not going to get you into heaven. None of us are good enough to get into heaven. We're all sinners saved. And the only salvation is the blood of Jesus Christ. I believe that with all my heart. Mm-hmm. And that was why that video by Mel Gibson was so important. And why the evil forces in this country didn't want you to see it. Fortunately, it backfired. Why the ADL became the greatest proponent of Mel Gibson's film. And people did see that magnificent depiction of the death and, of course, the resurrection at the very end of our Lord Jesus Christ, because that's what the story of Christianity is about, the life and the crucifixion and the death and the resurrection, because Jesus Christ was to be the substitution, and for it is through him that we are saved through the blood of the Lamb. So we're going to have to, of course, let you go here. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, because they should be leading this truly spiritual battle. We ask you to pray for revival, because I'm firmly convinced that if the American people don't return to God, then, of course, there is no hope at all for the preservation of the society. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, at least for the people in the great Northwest who will be leaving us, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you. Again, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow then, when we'll be with you once again. Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest this evening, Bob DeMoss. But I thought maybe I'd share with you a little bit about the meeting I went to this weekend. The Friday meeting was a meeting of the American Association on Civilian Defense. And, of course, the second meeting was Doctors for Disaster Preparedness, which goes right along with this idea that we could have a major catastrophic event that could cripple this country. But first of all, the meeting on civilian defense was really very informative to me. You know, we're a nation of about 275 million people today, and Russia is in full production for war. Russia has a very, very adequate civil defense program. We actually saw pictures of their underground bunkers. Every major building there is equipped for taking care of the people in case of a nuclear war. They have vast supplies of food and medicines and water to protect their population because they're intent upon surviving the coming nuclear war. We talked about Switzerland, and they actually showed the pictures. Every Swiss home, every major Swiss building has a nuclear shelter there. Every school has a nuclear shelter for the children. You see, they want to protect their population. The same thing is true in China, although not to the same extent, but they have a massive underground system, and we will be offering a program, that actually DVDs with pictures of everything I'm telling you. Many countries in the world have adequate, or at least are working on civilian defense because they know, whether it be nuclear or chemical or biological warfare, that we are on the edge of World War III. I rather think it's going to be nuclear as we see more and more of the Arab countries having access to nuclear weapons. And this is, of course, why this whole September 11th had to happen, so that we could justify getting into a war in the Middle East. And, ladies and gentlemen, our troops aren't coming home, no matter what you're being told. We are going to leave our troops there. We're building something like 12 massive bases in Iraq. You don't do that if you're turning the country over to the Iraqis. We are going to keep our military presence there indefinitely, and may very well be moving into some of the adjacent countries there to bring them democracy as well. Of course, it's not simply by accident that the man who heads the new Iraqi government just happened by chance out of all the Iraqis in Iraq who have formerly worked for the CIA. But that's what that's really all about. What was really so interesting about the first meeting I attended, in a nation of 275 million people, there were 15 people there, including the speakers. For the first half hour, program, the morning program, maybe 20 in the afternoon, including the speakers, and there were about 8 of them were speakers. And we had a woman who works for FEMA, it's a lecturer for FEMA, and when asked, what is FEMA going to do in case of a nuclear war, she said, we're not going to do anything. You're going to have a local program, a local plan. We don't have a plan, for the American people in case of a nuclear war. All the other countries are preparing for nuclear war. We're not preparing. And all I can say is, you better start making your plans, and we'll be doing some programs on that in the near future. And when you hear somebody from FEMA saying, well, I'm a lecturer for FEMA, I work for FEMA, we don't have any plan at all for the people of this country in case of this sort of a catastrophic event. After all, you don't expect the government to take care of you, do you? And I don't. I think we're going to have to look after ourselves, and I want you to start thinking about what you're going to do and getting the material we'll be offering here in the very near future as we put together a program on that you can begin setting up in your community on preparation, because if we're going to survive, we're going to have to survive community by community, not as a nation as a whole. They have their bunkers for the Dick Cheneys and the George Bushes, but not for you and I. And all I can say is, why are they building, blasting out a massive bunker under Dick Cheney's home if there's nothing to worry about? And, of course, they have places for Laura and George to go and for many of the members of Congress to go. But why aren't they trying to protect the American people? And that's a question every one of us should ask. And after all, as Ronald Reagan had said, a nation that will betray its fighting men one day will betray its own citizens. Well, that is the background, Bill. Now, is there anything else about those hearings where Senator Bob Smith presided, that where you testified? Anything else we should bring out about those hearings before we go on?
Yes, before I get into the hearings, Dr. Stan, I'd like to say what you were just talking about a little bit about the prisoner issue in this country. It's the issue, I said this 20 years ago, maybe longer, if the settlement of the prisoner of war issue was settled with this country and the foreign countries that we had war with, if that issue was settled, we could bring home live Americans and possibly other United Nations personnel that were prisoners of war that went back to their own countries. It would settle a lot of ill feelings throughout the world, because I believe in this world there are more people interested in live soldiers and sailors, Marines, and Air Force people than there are that aren't interested in them. But the issue is that we never get the news out because of the major networks. And that's where the problem lies, the major networks. They will not print the truth. This is what you were saying earlier. They will not print the truth. But as far as the hearings go, with Senator Smith, like I said, he was interviewed for 6 hours in Florida by my nephew, who flew down there. And he's willing to talk and be interviewed and tell the truth. And this is what he's been doing, telling the truth. Now, he ran for United States Senator in Bob Graham's spot this year in Florida, and he was defeated. Because they didn't know him enough down in Florida, for one thing. But at least he tried. But I think maybe a lot of it had to do with his own Republican Party. Like, they forced him out the first time. He didn't stand a chance this time down there, even though he was telling the truth.
Well, now, of course, the Republican primary hasn't been held yet. I think it's going to be held the end of August.
But what I'm saying is he was going to run, but he dropped out.
All right, he didn't run, actually.
No,
then.
He didn't run, actually, run.
Because I know Larry Klayman's running down there for that nomination. I don't know who else is running. I know that the Republican establishment, the CFR establishment, has the man they want to run. They want him to be the choice of the people. But that's always the way it is. They will run a couple of candidates. We can always vote for whoever we want to, as long as it's the candidate of their choice.
They don't want people like Bob Smith because he tells the truth. And if you tell the truth, it hurts the people that don't want him in there.
Right.
And that's where the problem lies in this country.
Well, I'll tell you what, could you find me his telephone number off the air and get it to me so I can get
your phone number down in Florida.
You do, and we'll get Bob Smith into our program, because he's one of the people I really, really respect. I had the opportunity of being there when the College of Cardinals, and that is that's the name that Howard Phillips uses for the Christian leaders who picked the President of the United States, George W. Bush, back in 1999, and of course, one of the people who was actually interviewed during that time was Bob Smith. And of all the people who were there, other than Pat Buchanan, certainly Bob Smith was the most intriguing of the candidates. I was very, 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 very taken with him.
He's very, very intelligent, and he's also very tells the truth. When he speaks, he tells the truth. Tells it the way it is.
Well, you know, we've had done many, many hearings, though, on the men we left behind. Oh, there have been other hearings that you've testified on during the years, haven't there?
Let me tell you about a hearing I testified in 1998 before the Veterans Committee in Washington. It was chaired by the congressman from Indiana. I forget his name now, but anyway, it's not on my tongue right now. But anyway, I testified before his committee in the afternoon. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And there were military men that testified before me. There were other people that testified. So when it came my turn to testify, I presented the evidence in full color. I had the hard evidence on live Americans in North Korea. I had photographs of the prison camps in North Korea now. where they're being held, and the jails that they're being held in, the collective farms where they're being held. I presented this before this committee. And again, only two of the 13 people on the committee were at that table. There was a chairman who got up and he had to go make a vote somewhere on the floor, and the vice chairman, I believe it was Mr. Taylor from Mississippi, he was the one that took over for the chairman and was questioning me on this and questioning me on that. But when I brought up one issue that he didn't like, and that was the issue of Reverend Jesse Jackson and his son, who was a congressman from Illinois, Jesse Jr., I brought up the issue about me introducing him to the North Korean ambassador in 1987 in a New York hotel when he was running for president of the United States. And I said Reverend Jackson was told by the ambassador of North Korea that there were live Americans from the Korean War in this country, and that Jackson wanted to go there on Christmas Eve, 1987, on December 24th, and bring them home. And when he called the State Department and talked to Jim Baker, who I know personally, and told Jim Baker he was going to North Korea, the following day the trip was off when I received a phone call from the Rainbow Coalition in Chicago that the State Department put sanctions on our travel to North Korea, and North Korea turned around and put sanctions on us. When I said this in that hearing room, and Taylor heard what I had to say, and I said, if you don't believe what I'm saying, and I showed him the letter that Jackson wrote to the ambassador, and I showed him the photograph that was taken in that room that day, which I have here, of Jackson, myself, the ambassador, and his aides, I said, why don't you bring Reverend Jackson in here, subpoena him to come before your committee, ask Congressman Jackson from Illinois to come here and sit with the three of us before you and your committee, and we'll see who's telling the truth. If I'm telling the truth, then we'll know where we stand. But if they lie, you will know it when they sit in front of you before this committee. You know what his answer was to me, Dr. Sand?
What was it?
We can't bring our congressman in here to testify. We don't do that. I said, well, what makes him better than me, even if he is a congressman? What makes him so important, and he knows the truth, that can't come before this committee and tell the truth? He said, well, we're not going to do that. We don't do that. We don't bring our own kind in here. I said, well, I don't believe that. I said, I believe this man should be brought before your committee, along with his father, and let's see who's telling the truth. Because his father and his son have denied that this hearing, these meetings never took place in New York, which they did, and I proved it.
Were you with him?
I was in the meeting. I was in the same room. I introduced him to the ambassador.
All right. Well, Chris, I wouldn't believe anything Jesse Jackson said. I mean,
no.
He's a womanizer. He's a, been stealing he got three or four foundations. He's stolen them from years, and of course the IRS lets him off. He paid off his mistress with tax-exempt money the taxpayers' money that no taxes were paid on it. But there's a force behind Jesse Jackson, because Jesse Jackson just happens by chance to be a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So he plays his part very well, and of course he is rewarded for corrupting just about everything he steps into, and for distorting the truth. And I'm not surprised that he would deny that something like that. He was told what to do. Jesse Jackson knows, of course, which side his bread is buttered on, and he's going to lie to do whatever he has to maintain his position, and all those donations coming into his foundation that allow him to live so well, and of course to keep all of his women on the side.
Right. Well, you know, Dr. Dan, that's why it took me 3 months to set up this meeting. I went through a lot to set this up with the North Koreans. He could not set up this meeting without me. And when I figured he was running for president of the United States, and that he had gone into other countries and was able to bring back one or two people that were hostages or whatever, I felt maybe he could do the same here if he had the chance. Well, the chance was that you don't talk to the State Department and tell them where you're going to do something. And the fatal mistake was he told the State Department. And because of what you just said about him, which is true today, I found that out later, that was one of the reasons why we never went to North Korea. But That was 14, 15 years ago. We could have had men home.
Sure. Well, because the whole idea is they don't want the men home. The North Vietnamese would love to get rid of the prisoners, and they were quite willing to give them back when we were negotiating for opening trade relationships. And so they wanted loans from the United States, and they wanted recognition, diplomatic recognition. They wanted American industries moving in there. They would have gladly given the men home. But, of course, we didn't want the men home. We let them keep the men and get the diplomatic recognition and the loans and the industries as long as they didn't tell the truth about the men we abandoned. Because, after all, think how that would look for Henry Kissinger and for Richard Nixon to realize they'd both lied to us, and Richard Nixon has gone to his just rewards. Mm-hmm. But Henry Kissinger is still here, and he is still doing everything he can to conceal the truth from the American people, one of the most important men we have in America, a man who was on the transition team or the election team for George W. Bush, a man that George Bush looked to for advice as he established his government, and who was to have been the director of the 9/11 Commission. Mm-hmm. Only there was so much furor from the families of the people who died in the World Trade Center fiasco and at the Pentagon because they didn't trust him at all, and so he backed away.
Yeah, and a good thing, too, because one other thing about Kissinger is he's a very good friend of the person I told you about, Dan Rather, in New York. They live near each other in Connecticut.
No, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
But I do know that Dan Rather owns a farm with Donald Rumsfeld, so you can be sure you're going to get impartial reporting on Donald Rumsfeld from Dan Rather. That fact is in the book of Rumsfeld's War by Richard, I think it's Scarborough, as I remember Richard Scarborough's book, of Rumsfeld's War, pointing out that Dan Rather owns a farm with Donald Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think he would have the integrity to tell people that. But he's not going to.
He's not going to do it. And when he told his producer to stay away from me, he meant what he said, because she hasn't been found since. That's 12 months ago.
Now, this is a woman who was the producer for Don Rather, and she wanted to bring you and get the truth out, and what happened?
Right. I received a phone call from her one morning telling me that she asked 48 hours. She was a producer of 48 hours. If we could do the story. So I received a call from Peter Van Sant, 2 days later, who was a correspondent for 48 hours. He said, we'd like to investigate your brother's case because of Linda Kim, our producer, had asked us to do this. Would you be willing to work with us? He said, we want to go into North Korea. We want you to go with us, and we want to talk to the North Koreans about live Americans in North Korea. I said, fine, I'll work with you on it. And have you got any documents you can send us? Well, Linda had all the documents that I had sent her for years, but I sent them some more documents that they hadn't seen, newer documents I received in the past couple of years. Well, you know, when I received the documents, I never heard anymore. And about 2 weeks later, Linda called me, and she said, I got some bad news. I said, what's that? She said, you know, for 7 years, I've been trying to get this program on the air about the men in North Korea that are still living. And I went to Dan Rather, and Mr. Rather told me to stay away from you, and I can't talk to you no more. I said, why would he tell you that? She says, I don't know, but that's what he told me, to stay away from you. And a week later, I called her back because I had a private number, and she had resigned, according to CBS. She had resigned her job and went to Hawaii. Well, I had correspondent friends of mine, ones that I could trust, that I've known for years, try to find her in Hawaii, and they could never find her. A week later, I called back CBS, and they told me, oh, she went to San Francisco. Well, it just so happens that Larry Jolodin, an author on Korean books, was living in San Francisco at the time, and he couldn't find her there either. And that's 12 months ago.
Well, everything has been done to cover up the truth. There's a book out. It's called Korean Atrocities, or
right.
Korean War Atrocities. It's written by a British author. It's very interesting. It was published by the Naval Press.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called them. They'd never heard of the book.
Oh, they got it.
What?
They have it.
Oh, I know they have it. But, initially, they'd never heard of it. They'd never heard of the author. They'd never heard of it. And finally, when I persisted, they finally admitted that, well, they did have it, and maybe we could get a copy through them. Now, I want you to know I have a copy of the book myself, and I know you have it, Bob. But there's an active effort to cover up the truth about the Korean War atrocities. After all, we wouldn't want to make the American people feel uncomfortable by realizing the horrors that we inflicted or allowed to be inflicted on our men, and then lie to the American people about it. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Is this true? Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob DeMoss, we're talking about the men we abandoned, the men we left behind in Korea. There were about 8,000 of them, weren't there, Bob?
Oh, yeah, at least 8,200. You know, Dr. Stan, I had the Naval Television Station in Philadelphia came here to do a story on my brother and the other men in North Korea 4 years ago. And for 2 days, they spent here at my home looking over the documents, the photographs, everything we had on North Korea and China. And when he went back to Philadelphia, I never heard another word for maybe about a month. So finally, they called me and said that the program was scheduled to go on at a certain time, and it would be shown all over the world. It would be on submarines, ships at sea. This program was going to go all over the world. Well, guess what? I went to Virginia for a meeting with some Vietnam veterans, and while I was there, I picked up the telephone, I called the station in Philadelphia. I said, could I speak to so-and-so, the gentleman that was doing the filming? And he was a Navy man, chief petty officer. And he got on the phone, and I said, what happened to the program? You tell me when it's coming out. He said, listen, we received a phone call from the White House 2 weeks ago, and they took it off the air.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens. In fact, I think it was Bill, your nephew, who was telling us about this. The fellow was going to testify, and several people actually died shortly before. Some of the people who were going to testify in one of the hearings died immediately before the hearings. One who was actually there for the hearing, a captain from the Army, came in and threatened to expose the fact that his mother, when he had, long before he was born, had been a prostitute. They wanted to embarrass him.
Yeah.
You want to tell that story? Because that is really so disheartening to realize how they will threaten families. They will do anything to conceal the truth. How does this story go?
Well, this is a gentleman by the name of Lloyd Pate, who lives in Grovetown, Georgia right now. He has a lot to do with the prisoner issue because he was a prisoner of war himself for 3 years in Camp Number 5, North Korea. He was the most reactionary prisoner of war this country has ever had. He came home alive because he was willing to stand up like a lot of men did to the Chinese, and they respected him for that. So he was released in 1953. And when my federal court case took place in 1982 in federal court in Hartford, Connecticut, when I sued the government for my brother's case for status change to prisoner of war, he took the stand as a witness. And before he took the stand, the attorney for the Army, a major, called him aside, unbeknownst to me at the time, called him aside and said to him, well, he says, if you're going to testify on behalf of Mr. Dumas, his brother's case, he says, we're going to have to bring up some dirt on your mother that you're not going to like. And Mr. Pate said to the attorney, he said, you can bring up anything you want. What is there to hide after all these years? My mother was a good woman. What can you bring up to hurt her in the first place by doing this? Well, my lawyer, attorney from Danbury, Connecticut, overheard this. He was in the hallway and overheard it. And he went up to the major and he said, you cannot do this. You can't talk to people like this and get away with it. And the major turned around and walked away. Well, when Mr. Pate took the stand, he testified to the truth. When the judge leaned over to his witness stand and put his elbow on his chair and listened to every word that this man said about the treatment of American prisoners in that camp and my brother's case, about what he knew about my brother. But that's the tactic that the government was using to kind of sway these people. But they couldn't sway this man because he was a great American. He was a hardline reactionary. And I believe that when he was captured, he was
hold that thought right there. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bob DeMoss, and we're talking about, well, the fact that when he had a test, he had a case, he brought against the federal government to have brought out in court that his brother had not died, as the family had been told, but that he was considered a prisoner of war. Now, they'd been lying to his family all the years, saying he died, and now the court case is held, and the government admitted they'd always known he was a POW, but and that he had been alive after the exchange of prisoners. And then, of course, but during this trial that was being held, and what year was that, Bob?
1982.
A major came up and threatened one of the witnesses to expose some dirt about his mother, you know, if he dared to tell the truth at the trial.
And he told the truth.
He told the truth. But this is the sort of thing that they'll do if you're in the military, or even retired military, they'll threaten to take away your pension.
Well, it was...
Go ahead. Me,
before I forget, Dr. Stan, it was Henry Kissinger, who met with my federal judge the night before, in federal court, in his chambers, to get me thrown out of court. And the following day, when the judge took the stand at 10:30 in the morning instead of 10 o'clock, and apologized for being late because he was on the phone with Washington, they were still trying to get me thrown out of court that morning.
In other words, they would go to any length to interfere with a federal judge, which is against the law, but these people aren't interested in the law. They make the laws, and they destroy judges, and Henry Kissinger, I'm sure, would not be above ordering people killed. I mean, we know what he did in Guatemala and in Chile. In fact, if we ever have war trials for past crimes, he will be tried. He is under indictment in many countries throughout the world for his involvement with the CIA and revolutions. And but, of course, we don't hear about that in America. No. After all, he's an elder statesman and a personal friend of the president's.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were referring to John Kennedy, you know, not doing anything about the prisoners of war, but I must tell you, Stan, back in 1954, if you remember Joe McCarthy from Wisconsin, Senator McCarthy with the Prisoner of War Committee in Washington, was formed in 1954 on North Korea. And McCarthy got up on the floor of the Senate and said, we have over 500 Americans that are still being held. Well, it was much more than that, but at the time, he said there were 500 Americans. Well, it just so happened on that committee in 54, there was Senator Kennedy from Massachusetts. Brother Bob Kennedy was the chief counsel on that committee. I think there were 12 or 13 senators on that committee for prisoners of war. In 1957, when Joe McCarthy supposedly passed away in the Rochester Hospital in New York of a heart attack, and he was buried in Milwaukee the following afternoon.
Well, I talked to the doctor who examined him when he went into the hospital. He was quite quite healthy, and within a week he was dead, and actually supposedly was of acute hepatitis. At least that was a story that was circulated at that time. But most people think Joe McCarthy was killed. Why? Because he was calling people's attention to what was really going on. He didn't understand the CFR, but he knew that the people within our government were betraying our nation. He thought it was because they were communists. He missed the whole picture. He didn't understand the CFR or the spiritual aspect of what was going on. But they certainly destroyed him. And, of course, after discrediting him by the Army McCarthy hearings, he was quite healthy. He went in for a routine examination. The doctor I was very close to was the intern who did the admission history. Joe McCarthy had no physical complaints. It was a routine examination, and a week later he was dead. Bethesda is a very dangerous place to go into if you're in good health.
Yes, and you know something, Dr. Stan, in 1959, when Richard Nixon decided to run for president, as vice president for two terms before, we all know now, I know anyway, and other people like me know that studied this for so many years, that if an American walked out alive in 1959, there would have been heads rolling down Pennsylvania Avenue, because they knew there were thousands of men left behind. The government knew this, so they didn't want anybody walking out alive. And above all, they didn't want Kennedy as president of the United States, because he was on a committee with Joe McCarthy trying to get these men out of China and North Korea for 6 or 7 years before he ran for president. Now, people can say what they want about me. I don't care, but my theory is, if you look at the whole issue of prisoners of war in this country, especially North Korea after the war ended, right up to the time that Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, I gave this theory to a newsman, and right now he believes what I'm saying, that I feel that he was assassinated not because of Cuba, not because of the mafia. He was assassinated because he was ready to bring home live Americans in 1963. Because 2 weeks before he was assassinated, he received a telegram from the Chinese government saying they wanted to negotiate for these men they were holding from the Korean War. 2 weeks later, he was dead in Dallas. And that same night, the night before he died, Nixon was in with Kissinger in Dallas, Texas, the night before he died.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We've got Roy, who is calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Roy. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing pretty good. I just had a quick question for you this evening.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if there was any connection with your conversation tonight in Flight 007 of the Korean Airlines that crashed. In 1983, there was also a representative on board.
I know all about that.
All right. Did you want to comment on that then?
All right. I was in the office of Congressman McDonald from Georgia. You're talking about Congressman McDonald?
Larry McDonald.
Right. Larry McDonald. I was in his office about a week before that trip, had his feet up on a desk, and we were eating peanuts from Plains, Georgia, Jimmy Carter's farm, drinking Coke, Coca-Cola, and we were talking about live Americans in the Russian government, Soviet Union, and North Korea and China. And Larry said to me, he says, Bob, I want you to know one thing. I'm going overseas next week to the Soviet Union, and he says we're going to deal with this issue of live Americans from the Korean War and the Soviet Union.
Well, he was going to Korea, wasn't he?
I believe
what
so.
Is it?
He was going to Korea.
Yeah, he was going to Korea, but he was also going to go over to Russia after.
Okay, fine.
Korea. And he said to me, and Senator, I believe it was Senator Helms that was going with him.
Yes, Helms was on a separate plane. In fact, where they stopped off on Alaska, and they were all going to get on the same plane. And Larry said, no, probably better that you and Steve Sims and the others are on a separate plane than I'm on. It was almost as if he had a premonition of what was about to happen.
I think so. But you know what he told me before he took the trip? He said he's written several books on communism. Larry told me this, and he said, you know, the communists hate my guts, and they sure as hey don't want me to talk about live Americans when I get over there. And I said, Larry, if you're going to take Senator Helms with you, make sure, because he was chairman of, you know, foreign relations, I don't know if he was chairman of foreign relations.
He was the Republican, senior Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Senate Foreign Relations. I said, make sure that he hears everything you want to say about live Americans. Well, we all know what happened next. The plane was shot down, and that was the end of him.
Well, I'm not sure it was the end of him. I really, for our, Roy, I don't know if you know, we have a four-tape set on Flight 007.
Okay.
We have all sorts of government documents on this. I believe that the people did not all die. But I believe our government, working with the communists, covered it up to make it look he was, because Larry McDonald was a rare individual. He was writing about how we were financing communism. He had a separate foundation, and he was putting out information on how we had financed communism from its inception, and we were still financing communism. And that was the one thing the establishment couldn't allow the American people to know, that we were creating it.
I see.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Roy calling us here, who had a question about Flight 007. I was just commenting that we do have a wonderful four-tape set on 007. We carry a book on 007. We have a series of government documents on a Flight 007. I think we even probably have a special where you can get really everything you ever wanted to know and probably a lot you didn't want to know, because the thought of Larry McDonald all these years abandoned by our government, and of course covered up, nothing was ever done to try to get those bodies back. And you have to ask yourself why. And when they finally did find the planes, there were no bodies in it. What happened to the bodies? Why they were all taken off and taken to prison camps? Because they could not have Larry McDonald there in the United States Congress pointing out that we were financing communism. We'd abandoned all these boys, prisoners of war. He was pointing out the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, working right along with the same goals, of course, the one world order and the new world religion.
And the main thing, the main thing he said to me in his office that day is, your congressman from your home state is never going to lift a finger to help you. None of these men will.
Well, Larry McDonald was a very courageous man. Anything else you want to say, Roy?
Oh, no, I just said that question because I was wondering if that was related to the conversation.
Well, I think it really was. I think it's very apropos. Now, of course, Bob knows a lot more about this than I do.
Okay, if you could elaborate, if you know anything more about the representative, could you do so, and I'll listen off the air.
Now, which representative are you speaking of?
Larry McDonald, the one, that's the person we were just, if there's more information about him there that you can think of right now, and I'd like to hear about it.
The question is, of course, did they survive? All the evidence suggests that they ditched the plane, that they did survive. There have been many, many reports of the alive prisoners, but you see, they have no concern about human life. And Larry McDonald was moved into Russia and then eventually someplace into the various, whether it was Tajikistan, Kazakhstan. The last time there was any word about him was in the early 1900s. There was a gentleman, a Jewish gentleman in Israel, who kept track of the prisoners of war, the prisoners and where they were being kept. And they had information being smuggled out of Russia and where he was in the early 1990s. But this would never be picked up by the John Birch Society. And you have to ask yourself, why wouldn't they cover that? They have a wonderful article appeared in Insight magazine, and we have copies of that article, great article on what happened to Larry McDonald. But the most amazing thing is, Insight magazine closed down just in the last 2 weeks. The New American are the two best magazines out there. But I've always wondered why the New American would never pick up the story and the very, very possibility that Larry McDonald was languishing in a Soviet prison someplace. Understood that.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
I remember that Senator Helms, Jesse Helms, and Larry McDonald were very close friends. And also that Senator Helms knew a lot about live Americans in the Soviet Union, China, and North Korea.
Right.
And it was Senator Helms in 1991 that told his investigators that, listen, I want criminal indictments against anyone who left these men in Vietnam and Korea. If we find out who they are, they're going to prison. Well, the next day, he shut his mouth and never said another word. Since that day, in 1991, he has never opened his mouth.
And, of course, obviously they had something on Senator Helms, because the wonderful report that we have, the government report, came out over the Senator Helms' signature on the prisoners of war. But it was done by a man named Jim Lucier, who'd been with Senator Helms for over 20 years, and he was unceremoniously called in and fired. And, of course, this was because he was looking into some of the Masonic connections of Senator Helms.
Right.
Anything else you wanted to cover, Roy?
That covers it pretty good. Thanks,
okay, God bless. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And they obviously had a very powerful control over Senator Helms during the last decade he was in the United States Senate. But this is how the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
Once they have something on you, they control you, they own you.
Oh, definitely so. Definitely. Dr. Stan, I'd like to go back to this past weekend in Washington, D.C., when my nephew showed the documentary to maybe 300 to 400 people. And when they got done with the documentary that he's doing, the promo that he had for a full hour, he got a standing ovation, because what they saw was the full truth on what happened to our men after the war, during the war, and after the war in Korea and China. And the people that are on the documentary, like you said, Jim Lucier, Congressman Dornan, Senator Smith, all the people, Jim and Joe Douglas, everybody that knows about the issue was in that documentary. And people that were watching it over the weekend believed everything that they said, because they knew these gentlemen and what they stand for in this country. They stand for telling the truth.
But I bet that wasn't written up in the Washington Post at all.
It wasn't written up anywhere. Nowhere was it written up. But the people that were there saw it and said it should be shown worldwide to everyone involved on the prisoner issue.
Well, of course, it's really a matter of trying to raise the funds to make the final cut on that,
right,
isn't it?
What happened over the weekend was a Vietnam veterans organization in Washington presented him with a check for $1,000 to help out with the documentary, which was nice of them because of what they saw. They couldn't believe what they were looking at, but it was a true story, very true.
But well, I just hope
it's going to take a monumental effort to get this out to the public.
Well, I just hope he can raise the funds to finish getting
right.
that, putting it together. And because I think it's so important. We need to have the information. The American people need to know. But more than that, they need to care. And of course, this is one of the problems we have. Everybody says, well, yes, this really is terrible. But as long as you don't keep talking about it, people so quickly forget. How soon we forget about the men who were abandoned. But that I would reiterate what President Reagan said. A nation that will betray its fighting men will eventually betray its own citizens. So our plea with you is, if you're out there in the listening audience, get the information that we offer, four tape sets on the men we left behind, the four tape set on One Man Returned, the book, Betrayed by Joe Douglas. If you're interested in the information on Larry Douglas, we have a special on, as I recall, on the 007. We have a four-tape set, a book, and the government documents. You need to have that information, and then you need to get it to others. And you can reach people that I can't reach if you're out there in the listening audience. If you want more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Well, Bob, when will this documentary be available? Do you have any idea?
Well, from what I understand, I talked to him last night on the telephone. He just got back from Washington to California, Pasadena. And right now the editors that are working with him, young editors in their 40s, you know, 45, 47, 48 years old, they're doing all they can to editorialize it and put it down into a compact one-hour documentary because of commercials that go with the 1 hour and try to get it to Disney, Discovery Channel, or HBO. And they're talking to HBO and Discovery Channel now about this. And so anyway, it's being put together. The way they got it set up now, they want to make sure that there's 90 minutes to 2 hours, but they're going to have to cut it down to 1 hour. 1 hour would probably sell a lot better than 2 hours, even though if you sit and watch this and you get enthralled just by looking at it, and you can't get your eyes away from the screen from what you hear coming out of the mouths of these people.
Well, I hope that maybe they'll put a two-hour one for that they put on DVD or on just on regular VHS for circulation in the general market, you know. In other words, this would not go on television, but it would be shown in homes because there's a tremendous market out there for this sort of thing.
Oh, if you see it, you have to see it to believe what you're looking at because it's a true story. There's no fiction here at all. There's no fiction in this story at all. What you see and what you hear is the God's honest truth. So help me God, everything that comes out of the mouth of the people that are testifying on this documentary is 100% true.
Well, for our listeners out there, why, Bob's nephew is Bill DeMoss, and we've had him on. We'll be having him on even again this week. And he's putting together this documentary. He's had a chance to talk to and then record the story of so many of the people that we're talking about. And it's so vitally important that you out there in the listening audience have the information available and that you show it to others. A lot of people out there, oh, they don't want to believe it. Well, when they see a video, when they see the documentation, why so often we will tell you, if you don't believe us, why don't you call and get the documentation? We have it, and we collect it, and we have it available for you so that you can get it to others. And there is a growing awareness out across America because everybody who is a regular listener to our program, or most of the people who are regular listeners, other than the CIA, which does monitor what we're doing, you'd be amazed how many hits we get from government websites listening to our programs. But there are good people in the government. There really are. There are people there who actually have helped me survive and keep on going through the years. And to them, I'm eternally grateful. The things that they can't themselves do, but they have helped me to continue doing what I'm doing. But, you know, we need, of course, to get that information out. And most of the people who listen to our program really are concerned after a period of time. They may start out thinking we're crazy. After a while, they begin to be afraid we're not. And then eventually they realize we're not. And they hear stories like Bob's and Bill DeMoss's story, and they help us to get it out. Well, Bob, we got about 5 or 6 minutes now in this program. What are the other things you'd like to bring out?
Well, I'd like to go back to 1996, Pastor Stan, Because in 1996, the North Koreans made an effort to release 11 American prisoners from the Korean War. And that effort by the North Korean government was being played out by this gentleman from New Jersey, Mr. Bob Egan, a businessman, with the White House National Security Office, run by a gentleman by the name of Colonel Pritchett, who worked under Sandy Bergen, the National Security Advisor. But he was in charge of POWs for the White House. And Mr. Egan and Mr. Pritchett negotiated for several months with the North Koreans, the South Koreans, and the White House for the release of these 11 Americans. At the time in 1996 is when the North Korean submarine went into South Korea, and it was a big hullabaloo. Many South Koreans were killed, soldiers were killed, and I believe that the North Koreans, most of them committed suicide that were in that submarine. Also at the time, there was a nuclear water reactor being talked about, where Japan and the United States was going to give the money to build those reactors to keep peace with North Korea. This was all going on. The Olympics were going on in Atlanta, Georgia. So the North Koreans felt this was a good time to make an effort to negotiate with the United States for the event. The first time that they felt that there would be some negotiations from Clinton's people at the White House. Well, as we all know, the negotiations broke down at the last minute when Mr. Egan called the White House and asked if they were ready to negotiate for 11 Americans from the Korean War. And Colonel Pritchett said, no, we're not going to negotiate for any of these men. And he asked, why not? After 3 months of negotiations, he said, because the North Koreans walked out of the meeting last week. And Mr. Egan said, what does that have to do with negotiations for live Americans? And he said, we're just not going to do it. And that was the end of it. This was 1996.
Well, did the North Koreans really walk out of the meeting? Or what really happened?
I haven't got the answers to that final answer from Mr. Egan, because he doesn't understand why they made that point, the White House, walking out of the meeting. So what?
Well, now, who is Mr. Egan? Is he still around?
Oh, yes. He lives in New Jersey. His name is Bob Egan. He's a big businessman. As a matter of fact, he owns two restaurants, one outside of the Meadowlands in New Jersey, and he has one in Hackensack, New Jersey. They have to do with some kind of pork food. I don't know what you call it. Pork ribs or something like that, his restaurant. But anyway, he goes in and out of North Korea for years, and he treated the North Koreans very well while they were here because he wanted to find out about live Americans in North Korea. And so when this came up in 1996, he had a chance to negotiate for these men, and the White House turned it down.
I'm sorry, was this 1996 or 1966?
No, 96.
1996. So this was under the Clinton administration. But, of course, Clinton wouldn't want to get those men back. Just like Nixon. Nixon didn't want to get them back, because, of course, then he'd have to admit he'd lied.
Yeah.
And, of course, Clinton would have to admit that all the people before him had lied. At least Reagan tried to do something.
Yes.
And, of course, he was stymied at every turn. Would you want to tell that story about what happened when they had the meeting at the White House with Colin Powell? And,
oh, boy.
Tell that story, because I think that's so important to our listeners.
This is what Ross Perot from Dallas, Texas, the businessman Ross Perot, had told my nephew a few months ago. This is only about a month ago. He said, we had a meeting with Reagan in the White House in 1983, or 82 or 83, I'm not sure, it was one or the other. And at that time, Ross Perot wanted to go to Vietnam to bring home live Americans because the Vietnamese had contacted him and said they were still holding live Americans from the Vietnam War in Hanoi. So Reagan was at that meeting, and Secretary Powell, who at the time was chief of staff Army Chief of Staff, and he was at the meeting. And when Ross told the president he wanted to go to Vietnam to bring these men home...
Now, this was Vietnam or Korea?
No, Vietnam.
Vietnam, okay.
In 82 or 83, and Secretary Powell, at the time General Powell, spoke up and said to President Reagan, Mr. President, we can't do that. We can't have any live Americans coming home from Vietnam because we wouldn't know how to answer to the American people. And Ross Perot said... The president turned around and said to Ross Perot, Mr. Perot, Ross, he says, we'd appreciate it if you would stay out of this and we would handle it from here in.
It was really meant we're not going to do anything.
Nothing, because of what Powell said. Because when he said that to Reagan, because it was only a day before that Reagan went into Rose Garden and mentioned live Americans from Korea and Vietnam.
Well, I think the people have to understand that the president is really a figurehead for the people behind him. And even if Ronald Reagan wanted to do something, they wouldn't let him do it. No. He'd already, of course, by that time, been shot by the son of one of George W. Bush's, Herbert Walker Bush's, very closest friends, a man that George Herbert Walker Bush had met with just the day before, and then his son that tries to kill the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that should have been pretty obvious to anybody. I mean, of all the assassins in the United States, what are the chances, do you think, just by accident, that the son of the very close friend of the vice president, who would become president if Reagan had died, that it would be that son who would try to kill the president?
I wonder how many people know that in this country.
Well, I hope that the people who are listening to our program will realize that Hinckley was the son of a very close friend of one of the closest friends of George Herbert Walker Bush.
Right, right. And a lot of people don't know that.
No, well, there's a lot of things.
It was never printed by the American media because they were in with the government. We said this before.
Sure.
The major media in this country does print only what they're told to print when it comes to something serious like this.
Well, then, is Ross Perot still trying
to
get the prisoners out? Is he still working?
He was supposed to go to North Korea in 1996. He was the go-between man. The North Koreans wanted him to come to North Korea to negotiate for these men. He went to the White House and told Clinton and Sandy Berger and Colonel Pritchard, the one I told you about going to North Korea, and they asked him not to get involved, to stay out of it, because they were already talking to North Korea about live Americans, which they weren't. That was a lie. That was a total lie. They were not talking to North Korea. It was only Mr. Egan, Colonel Pritchard at the White House that were negotiating for these men. And that's where it ended. Ross never went. Now, in the last 2 months, Ross has called my nephew six or seven times in the last 2 months. He's emailed him. He's talked to him on the telephone. He says, I'd like to go further and help you, but I can't. All I can tell you is what I know. What happened in the White House, about General Tai, knowing more about live Americans than any man in this country, because he was a defense intelligence officer and knew everything that went on in Vietnam and Korea about live Americans.
In fact, for our listeners, General Tai was the director of the National Defense Intelligence Agency. When was that? In the 1990s?
Right.
And, of course, he tried repeatedly to get the information out. He was in charge. He knew that there were prisoners there, and he was stymied by the people on his staff. I mean, although he was the boss, he couldn't get anything accomplished because he was being sandbagged by the people who were planted around him. And this is the situation that everybody's got into, Colonel Peck.
That
ran the same problem. There are people planted there to prevent the information from getting out and prevent the good military officers who want to bring the men home from preventing anything from getting accomplished.
That's right. And, you know, this is mind-boggling. When you sit down and study this, like you and I have done for years, and know about the issue, and the American people that don't know, it's mind-boggling when you see what happened to these men all these years, and we did nothing to negotiate for anyone. No one have we ever negotiated for in the history of this country.
And, of course, the thing is, both the North Vietnamese and the North Korean government would have gladly turned these people over a long time ago because it's a burden for them to have to keep them.
That's right. 100% correct. Like Colonel Young said, the North Korean colonel is in California right now. My nephew interviewed him for 5 or 6 hours. He said, your country knows all about this because I told them several times about live Americans in 1996 and 97 in a political prison camp in North Korea.
And of course, he was a man who had escaped. He had actually gotten out, and he knew other people who had been in those prison camps, had seen the Americans in the mid-1990s.
Right. And this man's living right now in California. And he told the American government, he told the South Korean government. And by the way, the South Korean government right now refuses to release any North Korean defectors' testimony to the American public. They will not release anything, according to what I was told today, only this afternoon, that this government has asked South Korea not to release any evidence on live Americans in North Korea.
Because the last thing that they want is for the American people to know this. You see, they want us to send our boys over to Iraq to continue fighting there, and the war is not going to end simply transferring power to somebody who worked for the CIA now. We call him the new president of Iraq. He's a CIA asset. He's always has been for many, many years. And the Iraqi people know that. The violence is not going to stop.
No.
And I fear that it's even going to get worse. And so our boys are going to stay there, and they're going to have to, continue losing their lives, both in Iraq and Afghanistan, because there are other wars that are planned there. And until you understand this, until you get our material on Iraq, the Untold Story, and read the plan, it's all there in something called Rebuilding America's Defenses, not something I wrote. It was written by the people affiliated with Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz back in the year 2000, long before the, maybe it was 2000, January 2001, I'm not sure. But it was built long before the September 11th attack. The plan was already there for going into Iraq. We just needed an excuse.
Yeah, and Stan, but you know also, too, that what you're getting out of Iraq right now is not the real casualty figures. You're never going to get the real casualty figures out of Iraq because they lied about the prisoners of war, and they are now lying about the figures of casualties. Don't forget, there's over 8,000 men being treated now worldwide from Iraq, from sicknesses, illnesses, stress, heart attack, stroke, young people. I'm not talking about older people. I'm talking about young soldiers. And the casualty of men being killed is much higher than what you're getting because the newsmen are only allowed to tell what they wanted to tell. That's what happened with the prisoners of war when they lied all these years about nobody's left behind.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you will join Bob and Dumas and Bill Dumas and the others, Joe Douglas's and Congressman Boutier and the others who are working to try to get something done. And, of course, I hope you want to get the information. Don't forget about what you've heard tonight, because, of course, next time it could be your son or your daughter when they resume the draft. Bob, thanks you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. It was a great two-hour program.
Thank you, Stan.
Good night, and God bless.
God bless you also.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like to get that information on the four-tape set, The Men We Left Behind, the four-tape set, One Man Returned, if you'd like to get that Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, we even have something we call the Vietnam Special, with, of course, our four-tape set on Vietnam, The Untold Story, because we never went there to fight communism. If you believe that, if you believe that they were really concerned about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, or that the Gulf of Tonkin incident occurred, or you believe we were worried about the domino effect, and, oh, if we don't protect Vietnam, why, it'll be Laos and Cambodia, and then Australia, New Zealand, and then San Francisco. That was what they had to tell the American people. The war had nothing to do with fighting communism, because we financed the North Vietnamese all during the war. How else do you think a country the size of the state of Mississippi could stand up against the mightiest nation in the world for 10 years, and the mightiest nation could lose that war? You need to get our material. The best enemies money could buy, interview with Professor Anthony Sutton. You need to get his testimony before the Republican National Committee in 1972. That's included in his book, which we carry, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, because that's what it's all about. We create our enemies, and then we send our boys halfway around to fight them and to suffer and die and then to be abandoned in the process. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Remember our number, it's 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can listen to our internet programs 5 hours a day, our shortwave programs 4 hours a day. Get the tapes, get others to listen to them, and then pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back again for another two-hour marathon here in the evening, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.